WWE All-Speaker Man, Justin Taylor and Alex Calvin.
Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I am Pete.
And that's our man of the booth, Boothman. Boothman! Well, thank you guys so much for coming out on a rainy evening.
Not everybody's willing to do that, come out on a rainy evening.
Yes. Uh-oh. Unfortunately, we have some sad news for you guys. One of our guests, Ron Mars, couldn't make it tonight because of rain delay.
Bullshit, right?
He was rained out.
He's made of sugar, it's fair. Yeah.
Yeah, that's for sure.
He's a little candy boy.
Is that a nice way of saying he's sweet?
Yeah, no.
He is. Very sweet guy.
Yeah, I was complimenting him. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Candyman.
Realistically, he missed his train, and he's really sorry that he cannot make it. He apologized.
Yeah, he wasn't on the comic book train.
Yes.
You know, not as good as the candy.
Not the train we're all on.
But we are very excited about the guest that we have tonight.
It showed up.
Otherwise known as the good guest.
He's here.
For coming out tonight, and our apologies to Ron Mars.
It's only right to apologize to him. What's he doing right now? Drinking a martini.
Oh, you know, the Mars teeny. Thank you. It was a sarcastic thank you.
Nice.
I'll teach you what sarcasm is like.
What's in a Martini? What's in a Martini?
Well, you chill it in your refrigerator for a while.
All right. And then you don't leave your house. That's it. You don't have
supposed
to drink
to go somewhere.
Yeah, it's not even a drink. It's just a way of life.
So, Cliff, let's talk about you for a little bit. How'd you get into comics? Let's start there.
I don't even know where to start with that. I needed a job, is the first thing. And I was working in advertising at the time, and always wanted to be in comics. And this is, you know, right after I got out of college. So I wasn't sure whether I wanted to draw, or wanted to write, or wanted to edit. Just kind of needed to find a way in. I mean, it's not really that big of an industry. You know, the funny thing is, you know, you read the books and you see the names, and you don't realize that, you know, it's really just like, you know, 500 people, maybe less than that, you know, really involved with putting the books together. So, you know, I realized I needed to break in somehow, and I ended up getting a job with Heidi McDonald at Disney Adventures magazine, where we did some kids comics every month, and then went over to Vertigo as assistant editor and did that for 2 years before jumping into freelance.
And so let's talk a little bit about what you've been working on right now. You've been working on Green Arrow, Black Canary. So how'd that start? How'd that come about? How'd you end up on that title?
That's actually a funny story. Apparently, right. Well, it's not that funny. Oh, come on! I ain't funny, you know.
So I was slipping on a banana peel. That's what I think is funny.
That backstage is littered with banana peels.
apparently they had, you know, the whole thing, you know, set up for a while. They didn't tell me about it, but I was thinking on my own, you know, why not, you know, Green Arrow and Black Canary have been together for a while. They should make it legal and, you know, and get married. So I was...
Amen.
I thought that was such a revolutionary idea that, you know, there
marriage.
Was a... I did a commission that was Green Arrow, Black Canary, and Green Lantern. And I was like, oh, this is pretty cool, you know, and what if they got married? It'd be, you know, be a good idea. I mean, they could kind of do something, maybe, you know, bump up the books a little bit. And I was like, all right, I'm going to show this to Dan DiDio. So I went in, and I showed it to him, and he was like, this is great, and ran out the door. And I was like, where's it going?
this is the president, or the editor.
Right, yes,
this is
the exec editor,
Or
I'm not sure what the title is.
The boss, basically.
Right, big boss.
He works at DC Comics in the copy room.
Yeah. So he ran down the hallway, and I followed him, and he turned into, made a left into Mike Carlin's office, who was the editor of Green Arrow, Black Canary, and said, you know, look at this, and you know, we got our guy, because apparently they've been looking for somebody for a while. And this is about a year before the book started, so, you know, I kind of knew about it. I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to do it, the timing was going to work out and everything, but it did.
And what has the input, I mean, Jed Winnick is the writer, what's the give and take between you guys in terms of putting together the first couple of issues of the book?
We've worked together before, Jed and I, on Josie Mack, which was this backup story in Detective Comics a while ago.
Josie Mack? Tiny fan.
Right? So we had a good working relationship already, but... which is to say, it was really smooth and we didn't need to talk at all. I'd get the scripts, I knew exactly what he wanted out of them, and there really wasn't a lot that I needed to, you know, kind of ask him about. So, but, you know, he had confidence in me, and so I don't have to ask him if I want to make little changes and stuff like that. So, with Green Arrow, Black Canary, it was, you know, it was pretty much just like going back to, you know, the old days and, you know, just like, you know, we had never stopped. So it was pretty smooth.
Let's talk a little bit about your style of art, because I think it's very interesting, it's very unique, and it's characterized a lot by very thick brush lines, very thick outlines and whatnot. Is that a conscious choice, or is it something of just like, this is what I can do?
You only have one pen.
Right. The line only comes out like that thick. It's a Sharpie. It's been kind of weird, like my style over the last few years. It's kind of really changed from book to book. At first, I think on Human Target for Vertigo, I was doing a very thick style. I started out, you know, doing a really thick style. Javier Pulido was the other series artist on that, and he was also doing something really kind of chunky and minimal. At the time, I wasn't sure, you know, where I wanted to go with that, you know, whether I should try to match up with him or do my own thing. So if you look at that series, as time goes by, the lines get thinner and thinner, and I start doing more and more of like a mainstream thing. But it wasn't until after that, you know, when I started working, I did a couple issues of Batman and the Spectre, Crisis Aftermath, the Spectre, and really kind of tried to mess around with the line weight a little bit. So a lot of what Green Arrow, Black Canary is kind of this really thick holding line, you know, and then some tinier, you know, thinner details in between. So kind of, you know, it looks a little bit more graphic that way. Sometimes it's a little flat, but, you know, that doesn't really bother me. I feel like it all separates and, you know, it looks different. You know, I can see maybe I might try and dial it back a little bit, but it was fun, and, you know, I was glad that people accepted it and liked it.
And right now, you are doing basically the covers for the series, right? Mm-hmm. Is that ongoing at this point?
Yeah. It's a lot of fun to do covers because, you know, you might be chugging away in the book, but the covers really give you a chance to try something, you know, really look at things from an illustrative, you know, bent. So, you know, I've been kind of looking at it and trying to think like, well, you know, if this was a poster, you know, how would you do it? You know, as opposed to like, you see a lot of covers that just kind of like splash pages from the inside. They're just, you know, someone that's running at you. There's like, you know, a million things going on. And I find a lot of those covers, you actually don't really notice them when they're on the stands. You know, I'd rather see something that's a little bit more pared down, but has like really cool colors and, you know, has like a really strong visual idea. So I've tried to do that on the covers. It can be hard to do because you try to match it up with what's actually going on inside the story. but yeah, no, it's a cool thing to do, but I struggle with it every month.
Yeah. Let's talk then about the big thing that you're working on that's coming out next year, which is
Greendale.
What?
Greendale?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a graphic novel for Vertigo, and it's actually based on a concept album by Neil Young that came out a few years ago.
Lone pockets of fandoms.
Joseph Mack, Neil Young.
In the house?
It's their mating call.
Yeah.
Cool. Ooh.
Do it. Right.
Joseph Mack.
So,
that's what a mating call sounds like.
Right, so you got Marnie, if I recall.
Oh,
there she is.
Trust it back.
Not here, guys.
Come on.
No. For the honeymoon.
Oh, yeah, jeez.
What are we talking about? Something?
I'm sorry you had to see that.
It's all right, I'm flattered. I didn't know it was a mating call.
So let's talk about it.
Neil.
It's a Neil Young concept album that came out a couple years ago, and it's based on this fictional town that he came up with in Northern California. And it's basically the story of this young girl who becomes a political activist and how she comes to leave town. It's like this really small town, and she's feeling really kind of closed in by it. And, you know, she's all kind of mixed up about things that are going on with the war and the government and stuff like that. And, you know, this kind of her coming-of-age story. And he's apparently had this story around for a while. I mean, not only has he done the concept album, he did a film version of it a couple years later, and, you know, that he directed and shot himself. And now he wants to do the comic, which is, we're expanding on a lot of the ideas that are in the album, and he's also got this weird mythology going on with it, where you don't really know this from listening to the album, but all the characters have these kind of supernatural powers. So, yeah, you know.
You don't get that from the album.
Yeah, no, apparently he's a comics fan. And
all of Neil Young's albums have superheroes, are about superheroes.
Yes, yeah, actually they are.
The old laughing at it,
you just got
she had laser eyes. Where are the Neil Young fans? Arvis, right?
Arvis Moon.
There we go. Yeah. So yeah, we're just kind of expanding on that, and you know, it should be cool. It's, you know, it'll be coming out next year.
Awesome. And about how long is it?
It's 150 something pages, and Neil Young provided sort of the skeleton story for it. But
yeah, he did the layouts, right?
Right. He did these kind of stick figure layouts.
Did you meet with him to talk about it?
I haven't. The funny thing is, he actually asked for me on the book, which was moment for me. This project has actually been sitting around for a couple of years. 2 years ago, they offered it to me, and I was busy because I was doing, you know, some Batman stuff. I had the doctor.
You told Neil you were busy. You're like, sorry, Neil.
Luckily, I didn't have to do it right to his face. It was probably like just as bad for my career because I had to tell the big. Head honcho at Vertigo, Karen Berger. I had to tell her, no, I can't really do it. This was a couple years ago, and I was, you know, set to do a couple other things, and the script came my way, and I was like, you know, I'm, the story's really cool. I'm just, you know, I don't know if I'm the right guy for this. And actually, the script, it wasn't written. They just had the pitch, and they sent that to me, and I was like, you know, this sounds awesome, but, you know, I don't really feel like, you know, I mean, it's going to be like in California, and it's farmlands, and ranches and small towns and stuff like that. I kind of think of myself as more of like a New York, you know, kind of guy. So I declined politely. And some years went by, and I was working on other stuff. And Super Bowl Sunday, and I get an email. And the email is, you know, this is an email for Cliff. It comes through my website, and the email says, you know, would you ever think about working on Greendale? You know, I think, you know, they got a really great take on it, and I think, you know, you'd be great for it. I know you're busy now, but maybe in the next year or so. And why?
Neil Young does a lot of business on Super Bowl Sunday.
You didn't know when it was neilyoung@compuserve.com.
No, it's a weirdo email, you know, that I couldn't figure out. And so
it's pretty cocky to sign his email, and why?
It was. Well, it was, you know, I didn't know who the hell it was. And for the longest time, I was like, who the hell? Why is New York sending me an email?
It's from the city, man.
You are kind of guy.
It took me about, like, you know, it took me a couple minutes. And I was like, oh, wait, the only other person would know about this is Neil. So then I figured out who it was. And then I realized it was also Super Bowl Sunday. And it was right after halftime. So he had just seen Tom Petty go up on stage during the halftime show. and probably forced him. You know, he probably went to the computer and was like, ah, damn it, I got to get this book out. Yeah. And he figured he was going to email me. So I got it, and I was like,
you will slice of life for Neil.
It said, P.S. fuck Tom Petty.
He's not doing any halftime shows, I think that. But, so I got the email, so I was like, all right, I got to check this out again. You know, I got the email. And luckily, it was right after I had quit Green Arrow and Black Canary. So, you know, came at the right time, and, you know, here we are.
You were like, this is kind of a funny story. And then ends with Neil Young emailing you on Silver Bowl Sunday. Yeah. I think we all agree that's a cool story.
All right. And it is time for our first section, which we like to call the stack. Yeah! All right. First thing we are going to talk about is Batman 676, otherwise known as the first part of Batman RIP. This is kicking off the storyline that Grant Morrison has been building throughout his run. where Batman doesn't die, actually. So,
what's going on? Quite a twist.
Yeah.
What's going on, guys?
This typically picks up right where Grant Morrison always leaves off, where I read it and I'm like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
It's all over the place. It's fantastic, but I have no
idea.
How
do you know it's fantastic?
Well, I'm into it. I just don't know what's happening. I'm like, oh, this seems cool. What? Where am I? Oh, we're back in time?
You're going to love Alzheimer's in a few years. I want to tell you now so you remember.
How did you get my house?
It'll be me there. I like this. It's like the start of a movie. Batman, yeah. The very first page.
Fucked up movie? What the hell? What kind of movies are you seeing?
Whoa, you should see snuff films. A lot of them. That's what Netflix keeps sending.
If you like Faces of Death, you might like Faces of Death too.
That's true. Yeah. So, yeah, it starts, and the first page is like Batman and Robin are like running on a roof, and they're like, Batman and Robin will never die. And then the next page is like 6 months earlier. So I think they're going to build toward that.
No.
I think this was great. You know, my biggest problem with it, and I've actually been reading similar commentary by other people, is that to back myself up.
Well, what other people?
Other aliases and emails that I use.
Okay.
The problem with this is there's a lot of other Batman stuff going on in the universe. So to read this book, you need to assume that nothing else is going on with Batman and nothing else is going on in the DC universe.
Right.
And in fact, basically nothing happened in the last issue of Batman, because it all starts with Batman is happy and he's having a good time. And
he's dating
and everything is very, very nice. Which even contradicts, I think, the last issue where he's going steadily insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why it seems like totally separate from the rest of the continuity.
Yeah.
And here's the question I have for you. All right, well, you know, but it's a cool story. So is a thing that, you know, you want everything to tie in, though? You know, I mean, because a lot of times some of the best stories are things that kind of just exist in their own, their own way. So, well, we talk about this a lot as, like, kind of where comics are going, where it's more like writing for a trade or a longer kind of volume. Where, like, he's like, all right, I'm going to start this series on at 676. So I'll build up to it enough and finish off the arcs. Maybe a fill-in will happen. And then you get your big arc, and then you move on. So it's more about building and then going away from this big central piece.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's good. It's definitely different than
To your point, I was a little disappointed to read the ads for this starting this week or this last week, I think, that said that the Batman RIP storyline is going through several of the Batman titles. I actually kind of wanted it just to be in the Batman titles.
It'll just be shitty times.
It's going to be like things like one panel of somebody be like, you think Batman's dead? Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, back to
the there's a two-page spread of the new Batmobile in here, which I was like, who cares? Like, what's the big deal with the Batmobile?
Who cares? It's the new Batmobile!
Yeah, but what?
Did you see the rims on that thing? It was
It's got a real car.
With a little symbol that says still.
Batman should be fighting crime and not tricking out his car.
Hey, don't tell a millionaire how to live his life.
I just think it's
what do you think about this issue, Cliff?
I actually haven't read it. If you ask me in about 6 weeks, I'll let you know, because I get the comp box from DC about 6 weeks after the book comes out. So
I thought it took you 6 weeks
to give
you
my card. And then,
That's cool. We'll talk on the phone and then call backwards in time.
Yes. Oh, my phone's ringing. Right.
Oh, I don't know. It vanished.
All right, let's move on. Talk about the latest.
This is like an episode of
Walking Dead, number 49. For those of you who haven't read it, we're probably going to spoil a little bit here. So.
Come on.
Are you all right?
If you have one homework assignment, it's read some books.
Are you going to be all right?
We're grading.
All right.
You're
all right. All right. I don't want to.
I have been literally a little back and forth about this title. I know you have as but you were back on with this issue. What's going on?
Well, I feel like the comic has been.
Wait, before you get started, I just want to say that he's been back and forth because they have been leaving and then coming back to a compound, which is just a retarded bird way of not liking a comic. Like, oh, I don't like the way they walk back and forth. And then you haven't been liking the fact.
I think you humans look ridiculous when you're walking on those crazy legs of yours.
Yeah, see, that's not
Alex
your
is a robot. You guys don't know. Anyway.
No, but then say why you haven't been liking it before you start.
Because it seems like it's been kind of treading water a little bit.
Going back and forth.
The course of the best view. And finally,
which is
now.
It's ridiculous because people are dropping like flies. How is that treading water?
If you guys aren't reading this, it's about zombies. And there are a bunch of humans. Yeah. Spoiler for you. There are a bunch of humans who are still not zombies. And slowly, over the course of the series, many more of them have been becoming zombies. And over the last few issues, a lot of them have become zombies.
Or just dying.
Yeah.
This issue.
When you die, you become a zombie.
Yeah, I'm dying to become a zombie. This issue, I think, is very much Kirkman bringing the series back to its roots.
Right.
The idea was, what happens at the end of a zombie movie? It's not just people sailing off into the sunset and having a good time.
What?
It's lonely. You know, at the end of a zombie movie.
They go on a pleasure cruise.
On a sailboat. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you haven't seen Pleasure Cruise of the Dead?
Nice.
I ordered on my Netflix.
This has what I think is one of the ballsiest moves ever in a comic book series on the last stand.
Whoa!
If it actually sticks, which I do think it's going to. Should I elaborate?
Yeah, after a statement like that.
This is a huge spoiler, so just go the if you don't want to know. I'm pretty sure they actually just killed off the main character of the series. Who's been the main character for 49 issues.
Well, if you see, he's the one in the shadows looking like a zombie. And then his son is the only one left alive.
So,
and maybe.
That's
he's sweating. He's sweating.
I really think this
is
Kirkman getting things back on track. He's been. We've been talking about he's been writing too many books for a while.
Yeah.
It feels like he's paring it down. It feels like he's really focusing on the plots of his books and getting back to what's important about them.
He's got to.
Yeah, which is great. All right, let's move on and talk about Guardians of the Galaxy number one.
I love you guys.
Yeah, a little bit.
You guys didn't like this, right?
I love the old Guardians of the Galaxy, which, if you don't know, a bunch of weird aliens in space.
But you also
around.
Really love raccoons, so that's probably why.
That's true.
Okay.
There is a character who is a raccoon who talks. Called Rocket Raccoon.
In this comic, it's totally different, and it's kind of there are a lot of good ideas in it, but they're all poorly done. There's these little like confessionals.
Yeah, I hate the MTV confessionals. That's what kills me.
Is it angsty?
What's that?
Oh, there's a little angsty.
There's the thing. I totally disagree with you.
All right, well, hold on. Before you disagree, let me just set up what happens is it's you see a bunch of action, and then you get a little confessional box where the character is commenting like, "Did you see that? I don't know how I feel about it. It's pretty scary. Let's see what happens next." And it's just like, what?
The weird thing is, Pete is correct. They do use that high, whiny voice.
Yes.
But,
I appreciate
it. I totally disagree with you guys. I think it's a really solid, fun first issue, and I don't mind the little boxes. They're very sparse throughout. Each character gets one or two of them, and they're counterpoints for what's going on in the panels. I think they're often very funny. And that's the thing that I liked about this issue is even though I haven't regularly been reading Nova or the Annihilation books, I mean, I pick them up occasionally, but this directly comes out of them. I was instantly able to pick up what was going on, instantly know what the characters are. They're all given a very defined purpose and a very defined idea. They even have a lot of fun about it. You know, there's right at the top of the book, one of the characters says, "We're going to be a proactive team. We're going to go after the threats before they happen." And somebody's like, "Really? Does that ever work? Ever?" And we've talked about that a lot on the show, where people always have, like, the Justice League are now going to be proactive and go after threats. And it lasts for, like, two issues, and that's it.
It's hard to go after something that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
That's
Am
true.
I right?
Good
yeah,
point.
Unless you got some sort of call from the future.
Oh, my phone's ringing!
Oh boy!
Oh, it's gone.
I just feel that like this. I like this issue, but the confessionals really pulled me out of the story. So there's that.
I think it's lame across the board.
I think it's awesome. Okay, let's move on. Green Arrow. So before we get into the issue proper, since we were kind of chatting about covers before, what went into making this cover?
It's awesome.
Yes.
Oh, what was the inspiration?
Yeah, that's a good question. They told me. They gave me the barest of outlines when it came to this, actually to most of the covers, for the story. So they're like, you know, needs to have Ra's al Ghul. And I was like, really? Like, isn't he supposed to be dead or something? Oh, no, he's in jail, you know, or something like that. And they were like, well, just put him in the background, like, you know, like a big head. You know, I was like,
oh, yeah.
Right. You know, but then, yeah, I decided to make it like one of these, you know, communist posters. And then,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Kind of running in front of it. Awesome. So, you know, it kind of combines... You know, you take that old, you know, that old idea that you always see of like, the, you know, the villain in the background and giant head, but you know, you kind of give it a different context. Mm-hmm. So, So yeah, that was it, you know, and then I kind of distressed it and made it look kind of old.
Put like ninjas behind it and stuff.
Yeah, and ninjas.
Great addition.
Yeah, yeah.
Ninja always the ninjas. Nice.
It makes me want to be a communist.
Wow.
Wow. That's true.
Finally. Mission accomplished.
Yeah. So let's talk about the issue a bit. We were chatting about this before the show, but the new artist, Mike Norton, is doing art very similar to the style that you kind of established for the book, but you were saying that is close to his natural style anyway?
I think it is. You know, I've talked to him before and read some, you know, stuff that he's had online, and, you know, he's been doing, you know, all these other books, like The Atom, I think he was on before, and he's going to be doing some stuff in Trinity, and I think what he's been doing is coming in after other artists and trying to, you know, kind of do their styles. And he's a really versatile guy, you know, so a bunch of books that he's done, you know, you look at him, like, you know, on the table, and you're like, this is the same guy. But I think his natural inclination is to kind of do something that's a little bit more, a little bit simpler, a little bit smoother. He likes Mike Parabek, artist passed away like years ago, but you know, was known for doing some of the early animated stuff at DC. So he's really keeping, you know, the general vibe of the book, which is great.
When someone comes in after another artist, are they like, just draw like that other guy?
Sometimes they say that, and then other times you just feel like you should, you know.
Is that so obnoxious, or are you?
No, not really. I mean, you know, I mean, for me, in, you know, on being the guy who left,
it's great.
No, it's, you know, it's kind of cool. It's a nice compliment, and it's nice to know that they respect, you know, the older issues and want to keep it going in that vein. You know, I feel bad that, you know, if Mike, you know, was like sitting there, like, you know, tearing his hair out trying to draw like me, you know, I don't.
But loaning him your pen.
Yeah, and my pencil.
Yeah.
Both the magic pencil. But Mike's a good guy, and you know, I don't think, you know, I think, you know, again, like, his natural, you know, style is somewhat closer to mine. So, you know, it's cool that he's getting a chance to do something that's, you know, more of his personality.
What did you guys think about this issue?
I love this series. It's like a nice long mystery.
It is. It's been really solid. At this point, though, I'm really getting anxious for him to find his son. At this point, I was like, oh, come on, let's get the son over.
Some people took Green Arrow's son.
Who was in a coma.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they keep finding things that aren't his son.
Yeah.
I really enjoy the series so much. I think John Winnick is doing a great job writing. It is funny. I know we've said this a bunch of times on the show. There's good emotion in it as well. And there's always good last page cliffhangers. They're always fun cliffhangers, which I think
Except
is very cool.
I was a little disappointed in this last page.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're a fan of the cliffhanger person?
I was just like, oh, I really wanted to be his son. I mean, we've been through this for a number of issues, and it was like, Plastic Man?
That's drama.
Oh, spoilers. Plastic Man.
Yeah.
Nice one.
Great.
Well, I couldn't help it. You guys were drawing it on me, so I had to
say it. I thought that's fun. That's kind of the last person you would expect to be in there, and it's really nice to see him back in the DC universe.
Yeah, if you're
really?
Looking,
you missed him?
A lot.
Yeah. If you're looking for your kidnapped son and you open a box and it's a crazy Plastic Man,
you'd be like, oh!
Good luck, young Alex Zeldin.
We'll see what happens.
AJ.
Let's move on and talk about Gen Next, number one. Now, if you guys don't know the background of this particular title, it has kind of an interesting history.
We will fail at explaining it to you.
Yes. We will explain it in a very surface way. But essentially, there was a vote held a little while ago saying, what should be Chris Claremont's next title? And
10 people voted.
And they all decided, 6 of them decided for Gen Next.
Yeah.
Basically,
the other 4 said, fuck Tom Petty.
It was confusing, but now finally it makes sense.
Fuck Tom Petty's coming out in a couple weeks.
Yeah, John Berger's ready.
Yeah, should be great. Writing it
on? Writing on track.
Tom Petty's actually drawing it. That was the weirdest thing.
All right.
So, next, the idea here is that the X-Men have aged in real time from the point that they were first introduced. And so this book is about essentially the grandchildren of the X-Men with characters like Old Beast, who looks
best
like
Beast. Best Beast ever.
He looks like Beast, but he has white hair.
It's hilarious. He's got, like, pulled back hair and big braided necklace. He's very hippied out. It's hilarious.
Yeah. What do you guys think about this book?
Well,
I thought I would hate it, and then I was like, oh, this is awesome. So it was a no shot. Well, I think they did a good job of it was a solid first issue, and it was just you really liked every person on the team. It wasn't like a team where they're like, here's a bunch of members, we're going to make a couple of kind of douchey, so we focused on one. It was like each one had its own personality, and you liked each one.
You think that's a decision someone makes? We're going to make this guy a little douchey?
That's what
we decided for
him. Tell me what's Scott Summers' deal. Why is he so douchey all the time? Why is Iron Man always a douche? You know what I mean? These are conscious decisions that people
It's an editorial thing. Douche him up a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
They say, one notch of douche.
One notch of douche.
I also was very surprised to end like this issue as well. I feel a little conflicted about it because here's the thing. I don't think the concept really comes through, frankly. This might as well, aside from the fact that there's lots of mutants going on and in the current Marvel Universe you can't have lots of mutants, it might as well exist in the current Marvel continuity. There's no reason it can't just be a mainstream X-Men story rather than where it's set. That being said, it's probably the best X-Men story I've read from Chris Claremont in years. It's
true.
A very good...
Someone vomited.
It's a very good, very solid, old-school X-Men story.
Yep.
Yeah.
It focuses on one character. It's very... They play in the Danger Room. They go out a bit. Train in the Danger Room. They go out a little bit. Play. It's very old-school X-Men, and I enjoy it a lot.
The thing for me is, like, it doesn't make sense where... it's like, what happened is the X-Men aged a long time.
Yeah.
Some stuff happened, like X-Men the End, but other stuff didn't happen. And this character's here, and this one's there. It's very confusing. But I don't know where to place it.
Is they don't even talk about that.
I know, that's why it's confusing.
Why you found that unconfusing?
Clear?
I don't understand why that bothers you so much. It's just like a separate kind of alternate thing.
You don't even know how to explain it.
Well, I don't, but I wasn't caught up like, hey, what is this really? I just enjoyed it for what it was because it didn't suck.
I thought it was well done.
Touche.
Yeah. Well, did you say douche or
touche? Definitely I'll
pick it up. Yeah, pick it up.
All right, let's move on. Last thing. This is something Pete picked up.
Cemetery
Keys 1-3. Pete, what's going on?
Well, first of all, I'm always on the lookout for new indie stuff, and you can't get more indie.
Like some sort of douchey record producer.
Whoa!
I don't have a ponytail, so that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Hey!
Hey!
Douchey. So I enjoyed the fact that this is kind of like, hey, I made this, I drew it, I made copies of it, and I stapled the middle. I mean, it's really just it's a
good
comic
because a lot of comic books these days are stapled like in the side.
Yeah, you
know, what I'm just saying is that, you know, this is a comic trying to make attention for itself, and I hope it does that because the art is fantastic. The story is all over the place, a little crazy, but I love how it's really just kind of pieced together. It's
like almost by a crazy person.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
That may be what you didn't like about it.
Maybe. I do feel bad. I don't want to spend.
Are you saying crazy people can't make comics? Is that what you're saying?
Well, they can make comics, apparently.
Yeah.
All he needs is a stapler, some crazy, and a couple piece of paper. And Cliff's magic
pencil. I do absolutely understand what you're saying. I think it's very cool that somebody, you know, put a lot of. Put a lot of effort into something, drew the wrong book, stapled it, released it. I really do think...
Stop giving him comments for stapling. Did she finish it and they were like, what do I do now?
Yeah, right. Like, you have a stapler.
Yeah, exactly.
I went right back... I don't want to say it, but I went back stapling.
No, you don't.
I do. I think we're missing the fact that it's folded. Yeah.
It's hard to fold it.
Pete would say pick it up.
I liked it too.
Wow.
I will say.
Yes!
It's pretty crazy, but there's some cool parts. It's weird. It's really weird.
Yeah.
Very tiny print. Yeah. I think they should make it bigger, like Xerox on bigger paper. And then fold it.
Nice. All right.
That's creative criticism.
And that's it for the stack.
All right!
It's time for our next section, which is my favorite section, because it's the section you guys make up. It's your audience questions. And for that, we're going to bring out Booth Man!
Booth Man!
Booth Man!
I love it.
What happened?
happy.
Everyone said your name.
No, I know, because they love me, right? Wow, I'm slowly winning them all over.
Nice.
Okay, so I got some questions and some cool prizes for the questions that I think are good.
Ooh.
Nice.
Yeah. That's a lot of power you have.
It really is. You gave it to me, so. Here we go. Which recent comics do you consider worthy enough to be classics?
Oh.
Right? That's a good question.
Ooh. Damn.
That is a good question.
Ooh. Ooh.
Yeah. Cliff.
Cliff, we don't know
no
what
pressure.
To say.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
Could draw your way out of this one.
Yeah.
Oh, man! Blue Beetle.
Here,
well,
yeah,
yes.
Think about it a little bit. I was going to say Blue Beetle.
Civil War is going to be known as a classic, I think, for better or worse,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
because it had such a big effect on the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to clarify about the Blue Beetle, I think definitively after the first 25 issues, John Rogers run on the title, excellent all the way through.
Well, classic, what does that mean? Like, people are going to be like, Blue Beetle.
Not me. I won't be able to remember. I would say Garth Ennis's run on the Punisher.
Yeah. What does it mean to be classic, though? How many?
Oh my God! Stop asking that after everything.
Who's gonna? I don't know. Isn't that a fair question?
What do you consider
who's
to be
classic? About Civil War.
It's gonna be the same way you talk about it.
Yeah,
it's
classic. I mean, you know, I guess the ones that keep coming up that people still keep buying. I mean, things like Teen Titans, like, you know, the Perez, you know,
mm-hmm.
Teen Titans stuff. I mean, I guess that's legitimately classic at this point.
Yeah.
You know, John Byrne X-Men stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, are we talking that level? Or are we talking, like, a little bit below that?
I mean, I think you're talking, that's probably a good definition. Is that an all right definition?
Yeah,
that's
good. Yeah.
Should we put it in, like,
so stuff that's coming out now, and I think it's really hard to say...
Yeah.
What now is going to be classic when you haven't seen the end of it. That's why I feel confident in the Blue Beetle, because seeing the span of John Rogers' run, I think it really holds together as a really beautiful story, which is why I think it's going to last. Something like All-Star Superman probably
that's a good
will be classic.
Mm-hmm.
Why the Last Man, which...
Yeah.
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 Well, what about, we've talked about before about Fables. Is Fables going to be a classic? Just the... question in my mind is that it's ongoing, that there's no real end in sight.
That's a good point. For something to be classic, it has to begin and end, and then something bad has to happen afterwards, right? Like a bad, there has to be a bad take on it. With Fables, it's been kind of good the whole way through, so it's like, what would you say is classic? The whole thing is classic. Like, look, John Burns are on the X-Men. You're like, well, we don't remember who came after him because it wasn't as good. You know what I mean? So, like, if it's just a big...
Sorry, Dave Gotham.
Yeah. What?
No, I'm saying like.
Talking about like bands. Talking about like bands.
Like Nirvana was like before he died, you know.
Right? Yeah, if he came out and made a bunch of bad music. I don't think.
Now it would be awesome.
If he came back from the dead.
That's what I'm talking about. That would be
oh, you're talking about. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah. If Kurt Cobain came back from the dead and started making music, even if it was not as good, we'd still be like, zombie.
That's a great point.
Thank you.
I think that answers the question.
Yeah, and for that question, I have an awesome prize for you. Who asked that? I can't see.
Yeah, all right.
Lucky.
Nice.
Signed by one Mr. Flip here.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Wow. Wow.
That's so cool.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I know.
So
I can't say who asked that question.
Rocky did.
Oh, look at you.
Thank you.
Oh, look,
you didn't have a question.
Let's get the next question.
Yeah.
That was a tough one.
Yeah,
that was
yeah.
a tough one.
They only get tougher for me.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, if you could draw any sitcom, what would it be? I don't know if you...
I mean, 2.5 men. You're asking me.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm surprised you didn't say Buffy.
I would draw 30 Rock.
Really? Yeah, that would be awesome.
Good answer.
Pretty good to see.
Get a lot of, you know, weird
yeah.
stuff in there. Yeah.
You guys are all 2.5 men.
That's right, done.
Okay, next
question. We'll decide what's the next question.
We're going to talk about this as long as we want. I'm not going to keep drawing stuff.
Who wants to win Alex's fan art?
This one
you
is
can have that. Whoever asked that question,
oh,
you can have that. You don't have to sign it. Don't even sign
no,
it.
No,
Pick it up.
Picking up the pen lines.
Vanilla self-addressed stamp.
Yeah. Hey.
anyway, come pick it up after the show. let's go to the next question.
Okay. Cliff, can you please explain what Dr. 13 was about?
Dr. 13 was a book that Brian Azzarello and I did, and it was right after 52, or right around when 52 was ending. And the whole idea was that Dr. 13 is one of these characters you haven't seen in a while, and he and a bunch of other D-list characters that people have forgotten.
Infectious Lass.
Infectious Lass. We've got a pirate. We've got a Confederate ghost, a teenage caveman, a teenage witch, and a boy genius, and a Nazi gorilla. And so,
is there any other kind?
Yeah.
Yes.
I've been to the zoo.
So there are a bunch of totally unused characters that have been forgotten, and somehow they come together and they form a team because they realize they're being written out of existence, and that's it. I don't want to spoil it. I think that's all I can say about it.
Yep.
Confederate ghost.
Is Green Arrow the sassiest DC character?
Peace.
What makes a sassy character? All the characters sassy.
Classically sassy, yes. I would say classically sassy.
Classy sassy.
You think really?
You mean like wisecracking?
Cracking wise.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little more appropriate than sassy, which is if you're like, oh, stop!
So sassy!
Sassy? I don't know.
I don't want to answer this question.
Sassy?
Yeah.
I would say no, he's not the sassiest. I'm not sure who is the sassiest. Maybe, Superman?
That's Superman. A sassy character.
I wish Superman was more sassy, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I do too. I guess. Okay. Is juxtaposition always necessary to create a good comic?
Juxtaposition. Wow. That's like a really abstract question.
Yeah. It sounds like a question someone was like, who are these words?
Who asked that?
You mean comic?
Yeah, go ahead, admit to it.
I have no idea. I just like, I read a philosophy of comics like a while ago. I remember juxtaposition.
You were correct.
Is that from like Understanding Comics or something?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is. I mean, you know, what you're always doing is having, you know, one picture next to another one, and you're always, you know, comparing, you know, what's different about it. You know, is it later in time? Is it, you know, how much later in time is it the same guy? What's going on? So.
How could you do a comic book without juxtaposition?
And would it suck?
Something got very
well,
bad.
Somebody tried to.
Music now.
It's a little bit more complicated than that.
Slogans they use in each of them, I'm like, oh man, that one makes me want to see the movie less.
What?
Really?
Because they're like, witness the unstoppable. It's like, come on.
You were reading the stuff?
Yeah.
There was words?
There was words on that?
Yeah. All I saw was the screaming and the yelling and the smashing. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, it was naked out
and like hot girls. Was,
guys,
like,
I think I finally grew up.
Get out of here.
This is Neverland.
I am now 100% totally on board with this movie.
Wow.
Yeah, not necessarily just because of these commercials. I don't know how well it came through these speakers necessarily, but when we talked to Louis Leterrier, the director of the movie at Comic-Con, he told us they had just finished the score for the movie, and he felt it was, he called it Star Wars good, that it was giving him chills. And I feel like you get a little sense of that in these commercials, which got me very excited.
Especially when the Iron Man score was so bad.
Oh, yeah. I don't think it was bad, I just think it was unmemorable.
Yeah, boring.
Yeah. Well, what did you think? Are you looking forward to all
the Hulk? I saw the commercial last night, and then after it was done, I was just kind of like, so I know what you're talking about. Like, they're trying really hard to make it like cool and extreme and like in your face, and the movie actually might be really good. It's kind of hard for me. I think after Iron Man being so great, you know, and knowing that they did such a great job of it, it's sort of like, well, the bar is set really high. And
I feel like even the marketing for Iron Man was better. And this seems kind of like, you guys know that we kind of had problems with this movie. So
yeah, that's what.
Here's a bunch of stuff.
I'm kind of torn because I heard Ed Norton was such a dick that I don't want to support it. You know, it's kind of like.
You want to support him?
Yeah, I don't.
Well, he's going to
be all smashing and stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I'm torn. I mean, obviously, I'm a big fan, but if.
Ed Norton down, smashing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if he's going to be, you know, a douchebag, I don't want to make him the next one for the next movie. You know what I mean? Right. I support him.
Stupid question. Are you going to go see it?
Yes.
Yeah.
June 13th.
June 13th. You busy?
Wait, when is it?
It's sure. Other days after that.
It's not just June 13th. All right. Hulk movie's coming out. I gotta check that out or something. Let's move on. Next thing we're gonna talk about.
Someone's hulking out. We'll go see it.
This was announced earlier today. There's going to be a Prince of Persia movie, Prince of Persia the Sands of Time. Yes. The star of the movie is the Prince of Persia is Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yay! Damn it!
Wow.
I didn't make those pictures. Also, Gemma Atherton or something like that, who's going to be the new Bond girl, is going to be the Princess of Persia, maybe?
I'm glad they found such a great Persian actor.
No, that's really exciting. What do you guys think about this? Are you excited for this movie? Don't care?
I don't know. I played the video game on a like computer.
Wait, what's that?
Yeah, like an Apple IIe.
Well, the whole movie, I played that one.
Yeah, the way you run in the thing.
The whole movie is going to be side-scrolling.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. In a rolling chair. Yeah. Awesome. Cool. All right, next thing we're going to talk about.
I don't know. Prince of Persia, it's like a video that's based on a more modern video.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea here is to make it like Pirates of the Caribbean. Because it's Jerry Bruckheimer.
You really boned everybody out.
All right, let's move on. Talk about Lost.
Yeah.
Lost. Are you guys watching Lost?
Yeah.
What did you think of the last episode?
What happened in the last episode? There was
a smoke monster in a mysterious island.
Yeah. That was the last episode?
No.
That's every episode.
Actually, I gotta refresh my memory. It's been
people were confused and running around, scared.
There was a beach and a boat.
That's the point.
A gun.
That's it. You're really selling me on this.
Yeah.
No. Oh, there's the jungle and people.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And the people. They showed when they got back the Oceanic 6, right? and it's good. I mean, I feel like Lost has been really great this season, and they're really driving towards something. I think, you know, as soon as they did Flash Forward last year, it really gave them, it gave the audience, you know, an idea that they were moving towards something. And you know, whereas before it was just kind of meandering.
Well, I think when they really decided that they were going to have an end to the show, they were like, oh, yeah, now let's write toward that. Being like, here's some characters, and we can do anything we want.
Yeah,
pretty much.
I think it's great, and it's Lost is never better than when it's heading towards the season finale, because it really does give them that focus, and they turn it much more into an action movie in a certain way, which is fun. So I've been amazed that Ben has become my favorite character.
Yeah. I know!
Like, he's suddenly become like this kick-ass guy where he goes and he beats up people with, like, you know...
That was the coolest thing! A couple weeks ago, he woke up in the desert, and it was like, oh, and there were these guys talking to him, he was like, oh, nothing's wrong here. And he pulls out one of those beating sticks that is like a little thing, and you're like, and it goes, and then he just beat the shit out of these guys. And he's like this little white, callow, nerdy guy. Pale, and he.
Which is.
Huh?
No, like we're big, tough guys.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, you're taking that for granted, right?
What?
Huh?
Watch it. Let's move on. Last thing we're going to talk about at Week of Geek is Indiana Jones.
Oh, man.
You're pretty psyched for this.
I'm going to go see it. I can't wait. I've been watching all the old ones to get ready.
Nice.
I'm nervous. I am really nervous about it.
Pretty mixed reviews.
Yeah, I know.
Really? Mixed reviews?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I thought like it did well in Cannes, right?
It did okay again. Apparently, a lot of the reviews that came out there were people that are like, it's okay.
It's an indie film?
Yeah.
Eh. Nice. I apologize.
I wish we had more art to give.
Did this have anything to do with it?
I'm wondering if this does good, if the new indie would take over the series, if they would make more.
You mean Shia LaBeouf?
No.
I know,
right?
No.
Well, think about it. If it does do well...
He already has a classic movie series in Transformers and the Disturbia movies.
He's no real
classic. Classic.
That's right.
No classics. Classics like Disturbia.
Are they going to do Disturbia too?
I hope so.
He moves to another house.
Breaks the other leg.
I can't believe this is happening.
Again! Oh! I hope a hot chick comes over and helps
you. You guys
me.
Do an amazing Shia LaBeouf impression.
Did you like that?
It's working.
It's really good.
I appreciate my mom's home.
Yeah, I know.
Nice. All right, that's it for the Week of Geek.
Yeah!
It is now time for trivia, for which we turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right! This is a classic. Alright. So this is the part where we give where we give back to you, the lovely audience. This is your opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics. I know you might be like, I'm nervous. Maybe I won't get it. You'll get it. So who would like $25 free? Simply raise your hand. Yes, you, sir. Come on down. What's your name?
Alex.
Alex, audience?
Good
audience,
day.
Alex.
Hi, Alex.
Hi.
Can't see you guys.
All right, so this might be yours. I'm going to put this here. Here we go. So today's trivia is going to be about the Green Lantern Green Arrow series that came out a little bit ago, a little while back. Okay, so how it's going to work is I'm going to give you the question. You'll have three multiple choice answers. When you've heard all three, pick the one you want to go with, okay? Here we go. In Green Lantern Volume 2, number 85 through 86. That's right. The following storyline appeared. Was it A, Green Arrow fought Clayface? B, Green Lantern's sidekick Speedy was on H, or C, Green Lantern and Green Arrow both got drunk and made out with Hawk Girl.
Or D, none of the above.
I'm sorry, I said I meant to say Green Lantern sidekick
no,
Speedy.
Green Arrow.
It is Green Arrow.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Green Arrow sidekick.
You got that one.
Yeah. Which one are you going to go with?
What was A and B again?
Come on!
Okay.
Was it Speedy on H?
Yeah,
yes, it was! Thank you. It's a long way to go. Oh, man. It's always a good time. Here we go. During Green Lantern and Green Arrow, writer Denny O'Neill took on current events such as A, the Mason family cult murders, Manson. Wow. I'm on fire. I am on fire. B, the death penalty in California, or C, are Dipping Dots really the ice cream of the future?
Yes.
So it's either A, the Manson family cult murders, or B, the death penalty.
Let's go with B.
Or you could go with A.
A.
There we go. A. Here we go.
Always say
that
Pete said incorrectly.
That's right. Wait, that would be all of it.
That'd be all of it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, here we go. Final one. Here we go. If Alex Zalbin did his own video where he reviewed comics without Pete and Justin, would you, A, check it out because it'd probably be really factual, B, not check it out, I mean, what's the point, it's probably boring, or C, watch it and wonder where did his glasses go?
Wow. It's also good answers. Yeah. I'll have to go
with the A. Alright! There you go, gift card for you.
Thank you. Nailed it on the last one.
Now that is sassy.
Yeah.
Alright, as we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. But what are you guys looking forward to? Pete, we'll start with you.
I'm going to say Grendel, Behold the Devil.
That has been very good.
Yeah, it's been exciting.
Justice.
I guess Checkmate number 26. If you're not reading Checkmate, it's a great series. Pick it up.
Keep pushing it, but it's...
Have you picked it up yet?
No.
My job is not done.
JLA 21 comes out tomorrow, reintroducing the character of Libra, who's going to be important in Final Crisis. This is the first issue of JLA that has mattered in, I don't know.
Are you telling me that issues? Queen Bee storyline featuring the Flash didn't matter?
That was awesome.
That was nerdy and not good.
It is going to be good. Anyway, looking forward to that issue. Cliff?
Ghost Rider. I saw a preview of it on Jason Aaron's blog, and it looks awesome. Loveless and Scout.
Yeah. And what do you, just plug some stuff that you have coming out.
Just more Green Arrow and Greendale.
Nice.
Whoop.
Cool, so look for that. Okay, next week, a couple little plugs before we go. We are going to have comedian Selena Kopic on the show.
Who went to college with me. Isn't that a weird fact?
Thanks for sharing.
It's a fact.
You went to college?
You have just won an original cartoon of Two and a Half Men. Also, we are going to have Joe Infierni, who is the Eisner-nominated creator of The Process, an online webcomic, so it should be a pretty cool show. Also, check us out 3 times a week at pulpsecret.com, pulpsecret.com. What?
And tell them about your show. Here.
It's not a show.
Okay.
There's some other stuff at pulpsecret.com.
Yeah, sure is.
A couple of people want to thank Cliff.